Please be seated. Yes, you, Judge Koshnick, you were in mid-sentence, maybe in mid-word, but frankly, I can't remember.
Uh-huh. Yes, I just have a few more points, and then I'll be done and ready for any questions you may have. Right. My first point is this. If that had been an actual fire, your paper files would have been destroyed.
Who told you to say that?
Was that a demonstration?
I have to tell you, we had an electrical fire in the courthouse in Milwaukee, and the papers were okay. The computer system was not.
Right. Well, I actually talked to Jean Bisquette, who's here, head of CCAP, about that, and she tells me that every electronic record in CCAP is stored on 5 different servers.
That's right, and they were able to bring it all back up on the weekend and in business in Milwaukee on Monday morning.
Now it's almost instantaneous. 2 servers are in the home county. The other 3 are in different locations around the state. And so if a county goes down, if their servers both go down in the home county, you call CCAP, and they can redirect your traffic to Madison, and you have a reconnection within minutes. I also asked Ms. Bosquette about the security issue I think Justice Rogensack had asked about. And what Ms. Bosquette explained to me is there's really not a significant change as far as security is concerned. Since WCCA went online in 99, people have had Internet access to our system. And we've had confidential records in the system, juvenile records and mental health records. So all we're doing with e-filing is giving lawyers and parties one additional way to file something, but we're not increasing any vulnerability that hasn't existed since 99.
Well, if all the records are electronically available, and if someone can get into the system, you are, because juvenile records now are obviously confidential, but if someone could get into the system and say they wanted to know about this young girl or this young boy, and they found their stuff in the system, if they can hack in, if it's electronic, they could get it where the clerk is not going to give it to them.
Well, that's true, but my point is that they have the same availability, vulnerability now as we have since 99, and there have been no break-ins since 99. The same potential vulnerability exists from a computer security point of view?
It may be as good as it can get. I bring it up only because it seems like everybody in the world is getting hacked into these days, so I was just kind of curious about that.
It's a security. They do regular vulnerability checks. They have a consultant on staff who keeps tabs on those things.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Circulates.
Can I follow up on that?
Yes.
You've had this for judges since the first of the year in Jefferson County.
Yes.
Now, have you sentenced any felons?
Yes.
Are there any PSIs in those cases?
Yes.
How do you access a PSI?
Everything's electronic. So when the PSI, I think it's filed in paper form now, the clerk scans it, and when it's scanned, I'm notified on my judicial dashboard that a new document has been filed, pre-sentence. I won't go read it if it's a notice, but if it's a pre-sentence, something like that, I'll just click on the link and bring it up, and I can read it on my computer. Once or twice, if it's complicated, I've printed it out and written notes in the margins. You can still do that if you'd like, but it's available electronically like any other document in the file.
Now, as I understood the presentation that was given to us, one of the advantages of this system is that judges in other counties can look at files. Say in Jefferson County. Now, let's say Judge Stork wants to look at the file in the case where you have PSI. Is he going to be able to access the PSI?
Well, first of all, I know that CCAP can set rules and restrictions for all those questions. Electronically, yes, it's feasible. If for some reason the court system wanted to have a rule that prevented a judge in Dodge County from looking at a PSI in Jefferson County, we could put that into the system. On the other hand, if we wanted to make it available to him, we could do that as well. Nothing would change as far as the law is concerned with this petition being granted. So I think pre-sentences are, if they're part of the public file now, yes, it'd be available to Judge Stork over the Internet connection.
And he's going to be able to look at the PSI?
Yes, if it's publicly. I'm not sure if PSIs are kept. I think they're open records in the court file, but I'm not sure. But if it's an open record now, yes, Judge Stork would be able to look at my pre-sentence investigation through his J-dash.
But if it's closed and confidential, that remains closed and confidential on electronic filing.
That's right.
Well, I have to say, when we get the record up here, at least I am very reluctant to open a PSI.
I think maybe the PSIs are closed, I think. Clerks may know better than I, but I'm quite sure that they're closed up.
If it's closed, it'd be the same with e-filing or without. There'd be restricted access. Only the judge assigned to the case would have access. A few exceptions. Like as a chief judge, I think I can access any judge's files in the district. But that'd be a special rule. But it would be the same rule as we have now without e-filing. If you're allowed to have access now with the paper filing system, you'd be able to have access electronically under the e-filing system. So that's an example of a substantive rule we're not proposing any changes to.
So sealed documents would be sealed electronically, just like they are now in a paper file.
Yes, that's right. And you bring to mind, Justice Ziegler, another good example. If you have a corporate secret, trade secret case, the lawyer can file it under seal temporarily, and it remains confidential until the judge looks at it and makes a determination as to whether it should be kept sealed in the court file or made part of the public court record. So there are those restrictions available, just like we have restrictions now. Sometimes something's filed now in a closed envelope with a cover letter. It says, Judge, this is confidential. I'd like to keep it confidential. Please make a decision. You can do the same thing electronically.
What does a person have to have to get into one of these files? For example, you must have a password. If somehow I had that password, could I get into everything you had?
You'd have to have both a password and access to a CCAP computer. Or get into my house. The CCAP gave me a program on my home computer called Remote Access. But that is only given to judges for certain computers. So if you were to break into my house and get access to my home computer and had my password and knew how to do it, you could access my files that way. Or if you're in the courthouse and you have access to a computer, a CCAP computer, other than a public access computer, and you had my password, you could do the same thing.
Okay, but I thought the presentation said that iPhones, you get all these files from iPhones.
Well, there's a difference between a judge who has access to all of his or her files electronically and an e-filing party. The e-filing party has a password that gives them access to the cases where they are a party. And yes, that party could access the same records on their iPhone as they could on their office computer or at any other computer, because they have the password for their case only.
Okay, so if I had your password, but I didn't have your iPhone, I couldn't get into the file. Is that right?
You have my password as a judge?
Yeah. I mean, after all, you're talking about all this security. I mean, I have been a victim of identity theft, so I'm a rather sensitive about this. And I suspect they might have gotten it off my iPhone. I don't know.
I don't believe that you can use a judge password to get access to the judge's files off his iPhone. I haven't tried that on my smartphone. I've only accessed court records electronically from CCAP computers in courthouses or from my home computer. A litigant would be different because a litigant e-file will only have access to those files where he or she is a party or a lawyer. I have not tried, and I don't think I could get access to my judge files through my phone.
I thought the thing that I looked at this noon showed iPhones.
Ms. Boscat assures me that I'm correct.
Okay. That's right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, how do we know, for example, Judge Wirtz here is going to maybe get up and talk about Fond du Lac County, how much money is necessary for Fond du Lac County to come on board here? What is that money going to be used for?
Well, as far as the money is concerned, we've given you a starting point to talk about finances. We don't make the decision about the budget. The court makes that decision. But our beginning point for conversation is $2.1 million to roll it out statewide, including CCAP people training on the ground in each county and additional scanners and monitors for each county to be able to use it. That's the rollout cost. Thereafter, there would be a per-case fee, currently $5, and our proposal would be around $6. That could vary. That authority set that fee is already in the statutes, by the way. That's not in the rule because we have separate statutory authority. The Director of State Courts does, to set that e-filing fee. But our best estimate right now is $2.1 million for the rollout, one-time cost, and then $6 per case per party for unlimited access to that party's case. It also is essentially a shift in workload from the counties to the state. You see, as filings are made electronically, the clerks, of course, spend a lot less time doing data entry. Right now, when a lawsuit is filed on paper, a clerk needs to type in all the information on the court computer, party name, date of birth, address. When it's filed electronically, those fields are already filled in on his or her screen when that is filed. So it's actually going to reduce workload for county support staff, including clerks of courts and judicial assistants. If anything, there's going to be more work required by CCAP to provide support for users of the system and maintain the electronic system. So it's, I think it's a benefit to the counties if it's implemented the way we're recommending. And I'd like to close by saying what we're asking you to do is approve the petition. We'd like you to keep the effective date as proposed, January 1st, 2016. Leave the end date open because that's affected by the funding that's available. But we'd like you to adopt the petition as submitted. If there are issues you have and conversations that need to be addressed, we're happy to work on those. It is a work in progress. So we're more than happy to continue to work with the court and other interested parties to fine-tune it to meet everybody's
Judge Koshnick,
yes.
Suppose we have little, if any, money. The governor did not put the $2.1 million into the budget. If I were a person, I would bet that the legislature is not going to do that either. So we're going to have to pick up the money in a variety of places and maybe much more slowly than planned. So if that were true, that there's no sign of money at the moment, why would we adopt these rules anyway?
Well, we see it as being two major steps. One is philosophically, do you want to adopt a rule that allows us to move forward with e-filing? And if so, how are we going to pay for it? The Chief Justice believes e-filing is inevitable. And there are another number of other financing options available. I don't want to go into all the details now, but some states, for example, have gone with a private vendor, little or no public money.
Well, if you had a private vendor, would you need these kinds of rules?
To make it mandatory, yes.
Well, to make it work with the private vendors, you'd have to tell them what to do. That would ultimately be the same across the state, I would think.
That's true.
And I would think that if you had a county who was willing to put up funds for e-filing, that we ought to have rules in place so we start them out on the right foot, and if we have to do it one at a time, we do it one at a time, but they all have the same rules so we can put them all together later.
That's true. We'd like to have it be consistent between counties, at least after the rollout transition period. Many lawyers practice in multiple counties. It would be nice to have one system for filing throughout the circuit.
And you're trying to be paperless, and I assume that if we were ready to help your county be paperless, you put in these rules. These rules would be effective. I mean, right now you're scamming. You're doing it kind of self-help, do-it-yourself, e-filing, right?
Right.
But if you were going to go really electronically without scamming, there should be a set of rules that govern you.
Yes, we'd probably develop a local county rule if we decided to make our county go paperless e-filing ahead of the state. But we really believe it's vitally important to have CCAP running the operation, and the state statute, state rules, the best way to
go. And have 72 county rules.
Right.
Thank you. Are there any other questions?
Yeah. Have you done a survey of each county and know whether they say yay or nay, put me at the top of the list, the bottom of the list, or take me off your list?
Not each county per se, but the Clerk of Courts Association, for example, is unanimous in support. The state bar is in support. The public defenders here, they're in support. The counties association is represented here. I believe they have a letter of support.
Yeah, I see all the entities. I'm just wanting to know if there was contact made, you know, with particular counties, the judges and the clerk of court for that county.
No, I think the chief judge committee serves that function of speaking for the judges. I've talked to the judges in my district,
okay,
and they are generally supportive, some more than others. Some have concerns, but they're all willing to go along. I think they all realize it's inevitable. So I think the chief judges are sort of that voice of the judges.
I see. Okay, thank you.
Judge Kosnick, was there any opposition to the mandatory nature of the rules?
There have been a few negative comments. I did some interviews with the state bar. They put it in their monthly newsletter. They put it in their email on their website. There were a few negative comments, but actually fewer than I expected, a handful of negative comments. Basically say, why make it, you know, mandatory when voluntary isn't catching on? But I actually expected to have more resistance than I did. Most people embrace it. I think most practitioners are actually more accepting than judges in my experience. So I think most practitioners realize that it's something that's inevitable, and they want to go that way. A lot of the younger practitioners especially ask why they have to file things in paper. Why can't they just submit an email to the court, for example? That's a common question from the younger lawyers.
Judge Kosnick, were there any, in any parts of the discussions amongst the chief judges, was there consideration of the fact that with the procedural posture, so to speak, we're in with the budget, that there may be some delay, even if members of the court are in favor in concept of e-filing, that this court would have to, that there would be some lag time while the court reviews what the budget is actually going to be, how much will be available, and under the anticipated, from what it looks like, nothing's final, but from what it looks like, we'll be getting a block grant and we'll have to make some choices. And was there discussion among the chief judges about an expectation that there may very well be a lag time, even if the entire court hypothetically were in favor of this?
Yes, there was, Justice Gableman, and the chief judges and the CCAP staff are more than happy to work with the court. If the court were to say, we've got half the money, you think you need to roll it out, tell us what we can do with that. Maybe we lengthen the time period of the rollout, things of that nature. So, yes, we expect, you know, we had to start somewhere. So what we're proposing is a beginning point. Here's the rule. If money was not an issue, here's how we'd like to do it. Realize money is an issue, and we're certainly able to work within whatever financial resources are available.
Have the chief judges prioritize, say, if the entire, what you said, $2.1 million roughly, isn't available for, I have no idea when or if it'll be available, but some portion of it is there some selection process that you have in place or that you've discussed about which counties or which areas of the state might be in the best position to both implement it as well as to benefit from its use?
To answer directly, the petition puts that decision-making authority in the Director of State Courts, and we assume that he or she would use criteria such as those that you have suggested, Justice Gableman. Counties who are willing and eager to go online first would be the first that would be likely to be selected.
And it would be likely that once the director's position is filled, he or she would consult with the chief judges to get their ideas.
Yes, I would expect that, and we're ready, willing, and able to assist in that regard.
Thank you.
I don't know if this was one of the points of Justice Gableman's question, but there was discussion of not having this rule hearing today in light of the fact that the governor did not put the $2.1 million into the budget. And the decision was made by the chief judges to go ahead with the rule hearing. That was their brothers, because you don't need the $2.1 million on the table now or in the near future. There's a reason to have these rules in place if and when you're ready to proceed.
That's right. Consider the rule first, whether it's wise to adopt it or not. And that's one of the reasons we're suggesting a beginning date, but an open end on the ending.
Kosnick, since the Chief Justice quite accurately placed her unknowingness of any point that I was trying to make. To be clear, I am not trying to make a point. I'm sorry, Justice?
Go ahead.
You watch the tape, Justice Bradley, and then you have that reaction. Okay. Or listen more carefully. Yes?
Are you finished, Justice?
No,
Gabriel?
I'm not.
Well, then
but
proceed.
Maybe you ask the justice seated to your right to comport herself. Judge Koshnick.
Maybe we need to take a time out.
Okay.
All right.
Colleagues, come on. Let Michael ask
exactly.
Justice Gableman ask his question and let's proceed. Please, Mike.
Let's do that, shall we?
To be clear, I reject the idea that there was any point. I reject any implication that there was any point of my question other than to find out whether the chief judges understand that we don't know what the state of the budget is, whether they have contingency plans. So that anyone who's interested knows, I had no point or even memory of the fact that there was discussion about whether this. I was anticipating that this hearing would be held. So there was no point, Judge Koshnick, just to be clear.
Thank you.
Help me with this if you can. I understand then that it's really the position unanimously of the chief judges that we go forward and adopt this rule, this rule dealing with a number of things like the signatures of court officials, the rule dealing with confidential information, the provisions regarding permitted court actions pending appeal, and all the other subheadings. And the determination of when it would start and how it would roll out is yet to be finalized. Would that be accurate or not? How would you respond to that, Judge?
Yes, with one clarification concerning my position. We'd like you to have the start date be January 1st of 2016. The Director of State Courts, under the rule, decides which counties actually go mandatory on which dates. So that doesn't force anything to happen. It simply is the beginning point, and after that point in time, if the director determines that funds are available and the county is appropriate to go online, then he or she could establish that actual date.
A couple of times you've responded with you want the beginning date and then beyond that. What happens if the court says no money and so we push back the beginning date? What's the consequence, if any, of pushing back that date?
Well, the beginning date simply says the director has authority to make a county go online mandatory at some point in the future. So that wouldn't need to be changed. There could be no end date. Conceivably, you could enact the rule with a beginning date 1/1/16 and decide never to make any county go online. We still have the voluntary e-filing statute, I think it's 801.17, which will remain in effect until all the counties go mandatory e-filing under 801.18. So those two statutes would coexist until the entire state is mandatory. So there's no downside to adopting the rule with a beginning date established but an end date left open.
And there may be no county after January 1, 2016 for a while that would be able to go on for any
right.
number of reasons,
right.
but the rule's in place.
Yeah, so we can work on the technical aspects of the rule that maybe need to be tweaked while that financial decision is being made.
Have you had the opportunity to read the comments that have been received about this?
Yes.
Is there any comment that you would like to respond to?
Well, I found the comments to be, by and large, very supportive. There are a few relatively minor issues we could deal with. I'm happy to deal with anyone you have in mind. But one lawyer, for example, said he's a licensed attorney. He doesn't actually file lawsuits. Maybe he's a clerk somewhere. He shouldn't be required to register.
That's Mr. Fall,
yes.
I think, Attorney Fall.
It should take him less than 5 minutes to register. It doesn't cost him anything. We think it would take more time and effort to write an exception for lawyers in that narrow category than it would be to say, go online. When you sign up for your CLEs, this is a very similar procedure. Just register with the system.
Yeah. And Eloise Anderson, the Secretary of the Department of Children and Families, had some comments for high-volume filers, which include both government agencies and large private firms, and said, we request that judges and court commissioners be provided with the software that would enable them to edit PDF documents. And my little note to myself says, how much would that cost? So we talked about that at a meeting recently, and it didn't seem that that was a very high cost for being able to do it. And I don't know whether that's been considered as within that scope. And
yes, that's included in our current proposal and cost structure. If a lawyer wants to submit a proposed order for a judge to consider signing, that's filed as a Word document rather than a PDF document, so the judge can change the wording of the order on his or her computer. And then when the judge electronically signs it, it automatically converts it to a PDF and is permanently stored. But we'd only allow, I think the plan is to only allow proposed orders and other documents that a judge may want to modify to be filed in Word, because the PDF is preferable for security and authentication purposes, as I understand it.
Counselor, as I read the rule about the startup date, it says that mandatory electronic filing shall begin no earlier than January 1st, 2016. And what I'm looking at is subsection 801.18.2, subsection B. And so if you see where I am, my question is this. If we adopted the rule as drafted, but inserted with a specified go-forward date after the court can consider the budget and kind of figure out how this goes together, would that still be acceptable, do you think, to you and to the chief judges?
Yes.
Thank you.
So how would it read?
Well, you know, I don't think it's good for me to draft at the bench here, but it does say mandatory electronic filing shall begin no earlier than January 1st. It doesn't say it has to begin by January 1st.
Right.
And I think all of us have some concerns about how we're going to put this together, even if we love e-filing with whatever money that we have. And so, you know, if we could add some phrase, and we have wonderful staff, Julie, who I'm sure could help us if the court decides this is a good thing to do, could add a phrase that the court would give notice on the date that it should go forward or on the date that it should actually commence.
Right. What we have envisioned is a county-by-county determination and implementation. So when the Director of State Court says Jefferson County will become mandatory e-filing on February 1st, 2016, that would be the rule for Jefferson County. It accomplishes the same.
But Jefferson County might have the money to do it and want CCAP to come in and do it for them.
Well,
right?
You know, if we're looking at a uniform rule, I'm just looking at uniformity throughout the state, and I'm not anxious to particularize it. That we will leave to the Director of State Courts. But I'm just trying to look at something that will make people comfortable with our budget money and give those who prefer e-filing a rule to proceed upon when and if money doesn't stand in our way. So, that's fine. You answered enough of my questions. Thank you.
We're working off the original petition 1403.
Yes, we filed one addendum, I think, a week or two ago with some clarifications of some minor points. That was a letter from Judge Wirtz.
Okay. Other than that letter, are you asking us to adopt this petition word for word?
Other than the end date of December 31st, 2018, yes.
And that's also in sub 2B,
the same paragraph. Yes.
So you just take out after counties, which shall be no later than December 31st, 2018. Strike that. That's what you're asking.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
One of the things, Your Honor, that you commented on earlier was how efficient this was for your judicial assistant or clerk, that you could, but took an hour to arrange the files, now can be done in 5 minutes. One of the things that crossed my mind when I was listening to both the short e-filing video that we were given and reading the materials, is the 11:59 deadline. Unlike we have cases that talk about the close of the clerk's office and later than that, too bad, so sad. And I can see the benefits of this to a large variety of stakeholders. One of the questions that comes to my mind is those poor assistants and paralegals and secretaries in law offices around the state that now, rather than rushing to get something out in the 5 o'clock mail or 7 o'clock by FedEx or I don't know what, but getting it to the courthouse really by 5 o'clock, I guess I should be saying. Now it's in the local counties, you have until 11:59. Any thought given to that part of the stakeholders and any concern about the rationale? Why is it 11:59? I know the National Center said that, but why 11:59? Why not the close of business?
Well, right now, of course, it is close of business, typically 4:30, and I recall being a practitioner, as I'm sure you do, preparing documents that were due that day and arriving down to the courthouse at 4:15. We're trying to accommodate lawyers and other parties so that they have more time to file their pleadings. A number of jurisdictions, including the federal courts, I think have gone with 11:59 p.m. or midnight deadline filing it. I haven't seen any negative feedback from support staff complaining they're having to work more hours. We see it as giving more flexibility to users of the court system and a benefit to help induce people to support the change.
I guess the only rationale that I saw for 11:59 was that's what the National Center for State Courts had in their documents, 11:59.
I think the way I see it is that right now it's 4:30 p.m. because that's when the courthouse is closed and people go home. Mm-hmm. Since that's no longer a restriction, we might as well give the person the benefit of the full day to file their papers.
It's just a 24/7, right?
Yes. And you can access your file from home if you're a party or a litigant and read the briefs and the transcripts, and you have access. You don't have to wait for the courthouse to open Monday morning to go see your file.
Instead of filing it at 4:30 or 5, you file at 11:59 if the date is whatever today's date is.
That's right.
I don't know if we sent notice to the Paralegal Association for this petition hearing, but
they can come in later, too. They can come in at noon instead of 7 o'clock, maybe.
Okay.
So if there were any other questions, then Judge Storick has a few brief comments for you on his experience in Dodge County. Thank you very much, Justices.
Thank you, Judge Storick.
Thank you, Judge Koshnick. Chief Justice, Justices of the Wisconsin Supreme Court, it's my privilege to be here in support of a petition that I feel strongly about. I'm a judge in Dodge County, presiding judge. We've been e-filing since 2012. This last year, we've e-filed over 2,000 cases. I want to tell you that when this rule is passed and implemented, I believe it's going to be the largest increase in the efficiency of the courts in the state of Wisconsin since CCAP began in 1992. I want to tell you that e-filing works. E-filing is efficient. It saves money. And it is a system that is relatively easy to use. As Judge Koshnick indicated, we live in an electronic world. We have electronic banking, electronic medical records. Businesses rely on electronics. We have electronics that we use to communicate. Our courts, despite the 2008 rule that was voluntary, continues to be a paper-based system. We file paper, we file paper, we file paper, we receive paper, we have to send out paper. There are youth today who don't know how to address an envelope and put a stamp on it. But we mail most of our things out.
A lot of them don't know how to write in a way that you can read it, too, because they teach keyboard, not
that's
penmanship.
Right. Well, don't look at my penmanship. Mine is almost the same way. But I think it is time for a change. It is time to set a goal that we need to adopt a change. And, you know, as circuit court judges, as courts, we require individuals to make changes all the time. We look at evidence-based practices. And we set goals for people. This is how we want you to change. And I think that's what this rule is. It is our goal to change from our paper-based system to an electronic system. Now, before I talk about what happens in Dodge County, I want to tell you that it's important to keep separate three different concepts. And I think even today they've been mingled somewhat. We have what we've talked about, a scanning system. That is separate from what we're talking about today. We have a paperless system. That really is separate from what we have today. And then we have an e-filing system. And e-filing is what we're really talking about today. So what are those systems? I want to start with scanning. In Dodge County, we started scanning in 2009. And we scanned, and by scanning, what happens is you create an electronic record. But with scanning, you receive the paper document, you scan it through the scanner, the clerk has to label it, the clerk has to put in all of the information, enter everything, because all you get is a piece of paper. You have to return the paper. You have to send out the paper notices. The judges can utilize that electronically scanned document on their dashboard. That electronically scanned document is subject to all of the same security concerns as with an e-filing system. But the scanning system gives some efficiencies, but it doesn't give the same efficiencies that the e-filing system has. Now, a scanning system does not have to be a paperless system. It can be, but let's talk about a paperless system. What a paperless system is when the courts utilize scanned documents that are received in paper, and they may also use some e-filing documents. And what they do is, to the extent that they receive paper, they use the Supreme Court rule that was passed in I believe it was January 2013, that permits them to destroy the paper in 48 hours. And so with a paperless system, you literally have a system where there is no paper file. And the judges then are required to use the electronic file. But that doesn't mean that the judges have to go paperless. And there's been some questions about what do you do if you have, a hearing where you have multiple documents. You can still print it out. And so even a paperless system is really paper on demand. Now, we've been able to move we started the first file type in 2011, a small claims paperless. As of 2014, all of our file types are paperless. And that paperless system, when I'm saying paperless, it means that we literally scan all the documents, all the file types, and the paper goes away. We have substantial increases in efficiency with that, because we don't have a paper file, the clerk doesn't have to go to the file in cabinet and file it. There's no files brought up to the judges. Nobody's looking for a file. You have savings as far as creating files, but you have the expense of scanning. And you can't do things electronically. In other words, I can't e-sign a scanned document. We can't send out those documents in scanned cases. We have to mail them out. And so you're not using the full efficiency of that electronic document system. Then let's look at e-filing. Finally, with e-filing, we have all of the efficiencies wrapped in one. What happens? There is no document that is sent in. When the attorney is e-filing, they, of course, as you saw in the video, they send it in electronically. They send that with in all of the information with that electronically. And so the clerk doesn't have to label the document, doesn't have to guess what it is. The attorney will initially determine what it is. The clerk doesn't have to enter in all that information. The clerk doesn't need to open a file, much like the paperless system. But they can if they want to. I suppose they could print everything out. But the beauty of the e-filing system is that when you have e-filing parties, the court sends a notice by clicking a button and it goes out to them instantaneously by email. When a document is filed in the e-filing system, it goes out to all of the e-filing parties instantaneously. That doesn't happen in a scanning system. It doesn't happen in a paperless system that is based on scanning. It does happen in a paperless system that is based on e-filing. So I just wanted to try to differentiate those three types of systems, because it's important to realize that we're looking at the e-filing with this. We're still going to have courts that are starting a scanning system. Maybe they're going paperless with a scanning system, but it's still not an efficient system. So how does it work? Well, I'm going to just talk about what happens in a criminal case in Dodge County. The DA will prepare a summons complaint. It'll be filed electronically. It's filed with all of the data. The clerk pulls that into the court record. Once they pull it in, it instantaneously goes to the file. It doesn't have to go in a stack and wait to be scanned. A copy is printed off for the defendant because, of course, the defendant needs a paper copy. And then when we have criminal defense attorneys, such as Catherine Kepsel, who is here from Dodge County in support of this, when a new document is filed in that file, she instantaneously gets a document. And we don't have to send her anything because it automatically goes out to them. That's what e-filing is really all about. So I do want to tell you that when we started going from a paper-based system to a system that was not paper-based, and we started with the scanning in 2009, we didn't start with the judges until 2011, some of the clerks were very hesitant. They didn't want to do it. In fact, one clerk admitted years later that she wanted to tell me where to go when I said this is when we're going to do it and when we're going to start it. But today they love it. And much like Judge Koshnick indicates, our JAs have more time, our clerks have more time. In fact, Lynn Ron will tell you that because of the use of the electronic records and the number of e-file cases we now have, the clerk of courts in Dodge County is down almost two clerks, and she's not going to replace them because you don't need them. The county is saving a lot of money, and I do believe that with the use of the dashboard and with the e-filing, that judges who are properly trained will find that it's much faster to find the documents than it is to do it in a paper file. But that doesn't mean that in all files they need to go paperless. In fact, I want to tell you that I've been using the electronic file for 3 years. I like it, but that doesn't mean that I always go without paper. I had a four-hour sentencing just yesterday. Had a PSI that was 26 pages in length. I pressed print, and I got a 26-page pre-sentence because I wanted to refer to certain pages during the sentencing. If I have a case where there's four different complaints, and, you know, they're going to be pleading to one, amending this one, and you know, it's a problem, I'll sometimes print out the four complaints.
How many screens do you have?
I have two screens, and I have two screens both in the courtroom and also in my chambers. I think it's very important to have two screens, and there are ways you can manipulate it so that you can have actually four documents in a row. But, you know, when you're moving fast in the hearing, sometimes you do want that piece of paper, and you can print that out if you want. Chief Justice, you asked about the letter that was received about, you know, the difficulty in finding something in the file. I wish that Judge Shasha had talked to me about that before he sent the letter. Because after the letter, I went to him. I said, Joe, do you know about the search feature on the dashboard? And he says, no, I've never used that. And I showed him how the search feature was. And then I said, Joe, do you realize that the document that you attached that complained about how it was labeled was a 2011 scanning, and that's before we started using it with judges? And, you know, the system we have today is much improved from what we had then. And we realized in 2011, when the judges started using it, that we needed to have better labeling of the documents. In fact, I wish Judge Josh had been at my seminar that I gave, where I talked to everybody about how important it was to make sure that the documents were appropriately labeled. We now appropriately label our documents.
How do you find that on the e-filing? How do you label it so you can find it?
Okay, there are what happens is you can pull up a label for the document. It may say order, but then there's right underneath that there's what's called additional text. Mm-hmm. And so rather than just the clerk entering it when they scan it as an order, they'll put in the bottom order to modify child support. Okay. so that you know that this is the child support. And the other thing is that really is something that encourages you to adopt this e-filing rule, because it's the scanning and the clerk deciding what it is that sometimes causes a problem, when hopefully the attorney will have a better idea as to what this document really is.
Do you have, like most counties or the ones that have talked to me, a lot of pro se folks filing domestic matters, either divorce or things relating to? They aren't covered by this.
No, they're not.
So if you scan their documents in, so the judge has them, and you have an attorney on one side and a pro se on the other, how do you handle that combination in regard to sending notices, in regard to a variety of things you've talked about?
Yeah, what happens, and CCAP has a system that if you have an attorney on one side and pro se on the other, and the attorney is e-filing, of course, you need, of course, today they have to opt in, but under the mandatory, they would be an e-filer. CCAP will send the notice electronically to the attorney. CCAP will automatically print out a notice for the other party. And so then we know that this party, you need to send a copy of something.
So the judge's clerk would know then, because right. There'd be a document printed out in the judge's chambers that this right. Order needs to get mailed, but the other one's already gone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thanks. One of the individuals, and a follow-up to that is that one of the problems with the private bar, and I think one of the reasons why we need to go to a mandatory system, is that if you're an attorney right now in a case where there are four different attorneys, and Catherine Kepsel and I have talked about this, and Catherine is here in support of this, when you file something in e-filing, and you're an e-filer, it automatically goes out to all of the other individuals who have opted in. But if there are four different attorneys, you have to somehow keep track of the fact that, you know, I need to send one to Attorney Smith because they're not an e-filing party. And Attorney Jones is, so they get theirs. And this Attorney Mack is not, so I've got to send them one. And so you're doing both electronically through filing with the court. It goes automatically. And on paper. And so here you're working a dual system. And that's difficult for an e-filer. A mandatory system would solve that.
And what's the platform electronically that you have to use in order to be able to e-file?
I think it's any internet connection, because it's really a, and I probably should refer this to Jean Bosquet, but I think that if you can get on the internet, I mean, you go to a web page. Mm-hmm. And so you need to have a web page. And here again, in talking to Catherine Kepsel, as an attorney, she told me that they didn't need to make any investment in additional equipment or hardware. They do need to be able to file both in Word, so they would need a Word, which is pretty standard,
yeah.
And they need to be able to file with a PDF. So they do need some scanning capability.
Okay. Thank you.
Judge Stork.
Yes, Justice.
Not just based on the comments of Judge Koshnick, but I want to let you know I am favorably inclined towards electronic filing. Have been for some time. In addition to the many good reasons that Judge Koshnick and yourself have listed out, I think it's inevitable. I think with the prevalence of electronic means of communication in all strata of our society, of all ages, it's simply a matter of time, and we might as well start as soon as we can. But we on the court are currently in the process of searching for a new director of state courts. And do you understand that most of us on this court are going to have to rely on whoever is the next director of state courts to become so familiar with the budget that they can advise us, especially under the new scheme proposed by the governor and under consideration by the legislature of the block grant, of first of all, do we have the money? Second of all, if we don't, are cuts going to have to be made in other areas so that we can implement it? And third, if we don't have all the money to implement it statewide, what can we do to kind of prioritize and what would make the most sense?
Well, certainly you'd want to go with those counties that are, I believe, first, that are fairly far along with the scanning and familiar with the system, because, of course, those counties would need less training. They'd be more prepared. You know, when I look at the CCAP rollout, you know, CCAP rollout started many years ago, and it finally ended, what, 6, 7, 8 years ago? Not even that, when we finally completed all 72 counties. So you've got to start somewhere. But the other thing that I think is important to think about with the money is that when you're asking anybody for money, I think you need to be able to tell them it works. Here's how we're using it. It's a proven commodity in a number of counties. We want to expand it. We know that the clerks in the counties that are using it believe that they're saving money. And as a business, you need to be able to say, this is a good investment because we're going to save more money than what it's going to cost to implement it in the state. I strongly believe that. I think until you actually have some up and running, that you're not going to be able to really prove that.
Certainly, you don't have to sell me so hard. I don't need a new I'm not set selling of formats. But,
you can tell I'm passionate about
but
it.
There
I'm
is.
Sorry, I don't.
But have you considered, you have obviously considered the fact that this court may very well have to wait until the appointment of a new director of state courts who can serve as a guide for most members of this court in the intricacies and the realities of our budget.
I certainly understand that.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Judge, I get a little confused here. Do we need to have money in hand to adopt these rules? Or can we adopt these rules and then if there's a means and a way to get into electronic filing, we have the rules in place?
If you have the rules in place, it's a means to get into.
That's right. We don't need a dime to adopt these rules.
Although I think you will need some money to build the framework.
Absolutely. But we don't need any money to adopt the rules. And these rules do not require that any county, or they don't require the director to put any county into mandatory e-filing at any time.
Correct.
Cannot do it before January 2016. Doesn't have to do it thereafter. Right?
Correct.
These are, I'm trying to think of an analogy of getting it ready. I suppose that maybe the closest analogy, which is not one that's very good for me because it's out of my field of expertise, is if I am going to think about making clothes, I might have my machine at home threaded. But I've already got the machine.
And then when you can afford some cloth, you'll make some clothes.
That's right. When I can afford the cloth, I'll make some clothes. That's why I say it's out of my jurisdiction. But I need to get maybe have a sample, and that this is the sample.
The rule does have some provisions in it that I think are important to help with the current e-filing that's going on.
That's what I'm driving at. Go ahead.
And those rules would include the change in the requirement for small claims to be notarized, the change in the notarization rule, the 1159 rule. So that would be standardized. So I think it does bring some standardization to what is being done.
Right. But nothing necessarily will have to be accomplished under these rules. They can be dormant.
Correct.
Until there's sufficient funds or wherewithal. Mm-hmm. That doesn't stop us from, would not stop us from adopting them because they're dormant. Right?
Absolutely.
But if and when there you got the wherewithal, you can start using them. I mean, that's how I see it. And if I'm, I mean, that's how I would vote or not vote on this. But I get a little confused when I keep hearing this emphasis on money, because I don't see that. Hey, listen, the money has already been spent on all this paper.
Okay, just one final thing that I wanted to say, and that is that there are three individuals that from Dodge County that felt strongly enough to accompany me here today, and I just want to quickly introduce them. First of all, we have Catherine Kepsel. Oh, they're over here. I'm sorry. Right. Catherine Kepsel. Catherine's a partner with the QSB law firm in Dodge County. She was our earliest e-filer. She's an advocate of it, and she would encourage the passage of mandatory e-filing. And then we have Bob Barrington. Bob Barrington is the managing attorney for the Dodge County District Attorney's Office. He was the one who really was an inspiration for Dodge County. He took their office completely paperless in 2009. He did that with very little money. He showed us the advantage of using the electronic files. He's also a member of the Board of Governors of the State Bar and supported it there. And Bob's here in favor of it. And he has e-filed successfully in the last year 1,700 files. So he can attest to the fact that it works. And finally, we have Lynn Ron, our clerk of courts. Lynn has been a proponent of first scanning and then going paperless and e-filing. And she will also attest to the fact that it works. And we've e-filed over 2,600 cases so far.
Judge Stork, I was going to ask if any of them would like to speak for themselves.
Pardon? I'm sorry.
I would like to ask if any one of them would like to speak for themselves. It's a long trip down, long trip home. Now's the time.
I want Attorney Barrington to pass up an opportunity to say something.
Well, he looks like he'd be willing. Counsel?
Chief Justice, Justices, I'd simply like to say that until this mandatory rule is put in place, my office can't take the next step to become more efficient. Mm-hmm. We have invested heavily in scanning equipment that I don't believe that we really need to have in the future. My office, Judge Stork said, very little money to implement it. We spent zero state funds. We spent less than $1,000 of county funds in order to implement this system. We have, since the implementation, completely eliminated any overtime in our office, and we've cut our paper and printing budget by more than 70%.
So if this rule were put into effect, you might be able to do it without a lot of state money.
Exactly.
That's the point of my repeatedly asking what's the matter with putting it in, whether or not we have a dime.
We have saved primarily the county of Dodge. We've saved Dodge County a lot of money.
Well, I care about the county, too.
Thank you.
Justice
Prosser. I'm interested, as a former DA years and years ago, exactly how you practice law. Let's say we have a felony case. Mm-hmm. Do you have a computer, a small computer on your table as you're there and it's a public defender?
In the courtroom, right?
In
what
the
you're
courtroom,
about.
Yeah. Counsel table. Does everybody have a computer?
The Department of Administration, through the DAIT, provides every district attorney and assistant district attorney with a laptop. We take our laptops to court. We don't take any files to court. We have instant access to every file in our office 24/7. One of the nice things is that when we go down and perhaps we have 35 or 40 cases that are going to be called right in a row, the secretary upstairs in our office has simultaneous access to the same file that I just finished. She doesn't have to wait for me, and I'm sure you remember taking piles of files back up, putting them on her desk, and then she has to go through each one, but can't start until the session's over. She's working the files as I'm finishing them in court, because we all have access to all the files all the time. It's extremely efficient.
Your Honor, I move for admission of Exhibit 12. How does that work?
Depending upon what it is that we are, if it's an actual exhibit, we would print it out, we would hand it to the court clerk, we would have it marked, and we would move it. However, motions, things that are part of our daily practice, we would, for instance, send a motion to the court in a PDF format. It would be accompanied by an MS Word document that the judge can sign. When the judge signs it currently, he'd have to sign it. Well, actually, currently, you can electronically sign it, so there is no more paper. And we get a message from CCAP saying that the order has been signed and that it's now available in our file.
Justice, if I could follow up on that, that exhibit would be scanned by the clerk. We are required to...
In the courtroom.
They take it downstairs to scan it. They'd scan that, so we'd have a scanned copy in the file, and we are under the file, the document retention policy to keep that for a period of time after the appeal process, the hard copy. So that is one of the exceptions.
Your Honor, I would like the jury to be able to see Exhibit 12.
Well, in our courtroom, we have a large screen and an Elmo, and we put it on an Elmo, and they'd be able to see it up on the screen.
In the jury room?
Oh, in the jury room. Well, with the jury room, we'd actually send them the piece of paper. So the exhibits are...
it isn't paperless.
It's not paperless. Paper on demand.
Paper on demand.
In the courtroom, you'd show it on a screen. Do the jurors have individual screens? In some courtrooms, they do.
And I'm an instructor at MATC in the paralegal program. Mm-hmm. In our new electronic courtroom out there, we've outfitted the jury room with a large screen. Certainly is something that could be done in circuit courts as well.
Mm-hmm. How does the public defender interface with this? Are they able to do things in a paperless format in Dodge County?
They actually have started to do the proposed orders in Microsoft Word. That's been relatively recent. I believe there's someone here from the State Public Defender's Office that's going to address the court and might be able to answer your questions more specifically.
Devin Lee, legal counsel. He's the fourth witness today.
May I ask one other question? As a very technically challenged person, I have had the experience of going to courthouses and asking to see a file. Suppose I went to the Dodge County Courthouse. I would like to see the file in the current file, or one 2 months ago. Okay. What do I have to do?
Justice, what would occur is we have, in Dodge County, we have three public access computers. When we did go paperless and with e-filing, we installed one extra one, so we went from two to three because we anticipated that there would be additional demand. And so you'd sit down at one of those computers. You can easily go to an icon and pull up all of the documents. The press loves it. Because, they can sit down at this screen. They can get all their documents. It used to be that we had to put out stacks of files that they wanted to look at. Now they just look at them on the computer. And the clerks will assist you if, for some reason, you can't find the document. They'll assist you find it.
Any print copies?
They can print copies.
Right,
and,
from
and
that
what
computer.
It, what is unique, you can pull out the documents. You can put it in a queue, you can print them out. They don't print out right there. They print out behind the counter in the clerk of court's office, and you go, you can give them a cash or a credit card, and you can get your copies.
That's why they print behind the counter.
They
so
print
you can
behind
get
the counter.
Paid.
Mm-hmm. They have to pay.
Which would be true under the old paper system, too.
It would be if you had a scanning system where you had electronic documents, but that's right. It's the same charge whether it's a paper system or if it's the electronic document.
Counsel, you've been very helpful.
Yeah,
thank you.
And
we've got two other people from Dodge.
Just Thank you for letting me speak this afternoon. I'll just be brief. Teresa Russell is going to speak on behalf of the Clerk of Court Association, so I won't take any of her thunder away. I'll just tell you very briefly. I've been in the Clerk of Court's office for more than 30 years. When I started, our record keeping was those old big books. We wrote in the big books. Mm-hmm. Then we started typing on docket cards. Then we got a word processor, and then a computer, and CCAP, which was met with some mixed acceptance when we got CCAP. Not everybody was on board when CCAP first started, much like e-filing. There's a lot of questions about e-filing, just like there was CCAP. But CCAP has become our go-to system, our court management system. We use it every day. Thousands of people use it every day. Recently, I heard a quote that said, when you reach the top of a mountain, you look for the next mountain. And I think the mandatory e-filing rule is the next mountain. We've come far, but we can go farther. I think we need that little extra push to go a little farther. Thank you very much. Unless you have a question. But like
Thank
I said,
you.
Teresa is here on our behalf. Yes,
Thank
ma'am.
You.
Thank
that,
you.
It's good. Any questions?
It's unfair that we have a witness who's so eloquent.
Well, that's why I called on her. All right. Thank you very much. And we have an attorney, Castle.
Good afternoon, Chief Justice and Justices. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak. I'm not as eloquent as Lynn Ron.
You're doing fine.
Thank you. From a practitioner's perspective, the appeal of e-filing has been the efficiency of being able to focus on the practice of law rather than the practical considerations of whether something gets mailed out, the delay of waiting for it to come back to the courthouse, or me taking it over to the courthouse. And I think that not having a mandatory e-filing rule removes that efficiency. It forces me, as Judge Stork mentioned, to focus on making sure that all the parties have notice, whether they're an electronic filer, whether they're not, that I have to mail it, and the multiple documents from the clerk's office. It's one foot in the e-filing world and one foot in the paper world, which forces our office to keep two separate filing systems. So it's the least efficient option. So I encourage you to adopt the rules presented.
I was at a table with some lawyers, and I said, well, it might cost $5 or $6 for any case that you would file. And there was this sticker shock at $5 or $6. And I said, well, how do you get to the – this was in Milwaukee. I said, well, what do you do to file in the courthouse? And the lawyer said, we hire a delivery service. And I said, how much is that? And that's $16 a file. So after we finished the conversation, $6 looked cheap. And I don't know, in Dodge County, do people bring in their filings? Do they mail them in? Do they FedEx them in? Are you right in Juneau?
I am located in Mayville and Beaver Dam. And we either...
You're from Mayville. Go ahead.
And we either drop things in Juneau or we mail them in. And the way I sell my clients an electronic filing is saying, look, you're paying me to go over there. I'm paying my assistant to go over there. Or we're paying for two rounds of mailing to go to the courthouse and then for the clerk to mail it back. It only takes a few filings for that cost to be made up.
Thank you.
Thank you,
counsel.
Well, thank you. I think the state of Wisconsin is ready for mandatory e-filing.
Could I ask one last question?
Justice Prosser.
In the proposed appropriation of $2.1 million, how much of that goes to CCAP?
I'd have to defer that question to somebody else because I really wasn't part of the Chief Judge's organization that came up with the $2.1 million. I really don't know. I would assume that a large portion of that would need to go to CCAP because they're really the ones who was going to, they were going to build the framework and they were going to do the training. But I don't absolutely know.
There's hardware, software, and then there are positions, temporary positions of consultants that are being used there as well as probably your own staff.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, John. Sorry,
I was going to introduce Teresa Russell. Okay. I forgot. Teresa Russell is the clerk of court in Washington County. She also is the vice president of the Wisconsin Clerks Association.
And was at the PPAC meeting.
That's correct. Good afternoon, Justices, Chief Justice. I'm pleased to be here to represent the Clerks of Court of Wisconsin and for this opportunity to speak to you today. Washington County was a pilot county for scanning files in 2004 and for e-filing in 2008. We have seen slow and steady growth and recently have had more interest in e-filing. The clerks are at varying levels of readiness. There are 29 counties doing e-filing and 14 counties that are paperless. There are also counties that haven't started scanning at all. In February at Judicial Education for the Clerks, there was a panel of fellow clerks who spoke with the value in going paperless. The information they provided was very good, and the clerks have asked for continued training and further discussions in this area. There is a plan to provide a working session in June so we can work together in creating a plan for each of our counties. Although this may not be an easy transition for anyone, including the clerks of court, the members of the Wisconsin Clerks of Circuit Court Association voted unanimously to support the petition. Some of the exciting things e-filing has to offer is a reduction in the time spent on data entry. On a standard divorce filing, for example, the clerk saves a minimum of 5 minutes per filing. In our county, we have about 16 open case files every year, and that includes every case type. The time savings would allow for better use of a clerk's time. Clerks would be more focused on data quality rather than data entry. Clerks can also work on other projects or duties as assigned. I can't promise staff savings, but two counties have stated that their vacancies are not being filled. Files that would normally be sent out of county can be viewed by the assigned judge on their judicial dashboard. There's no need to transport files from one county to the next. For those customers at the counter, quick access to the file is available in our lobby. Court reporters can view any cases that are also available to the public at their workstation or laptop by asking the clerk for a temporary access code. Confidential cases can be accessed by customers at a public access terminal and court reporters at a CCAP workstation by using a temporary access code as well. Regarding costs to the county, Wi-Fi is helpful, but it's not necessary. But it does increase a lawyer's efficiency in the courtroom. Many counties have installed it already for the convenience of the bar, litigants, and other agencies. Wi-Fi was installed at the courthouse in Washington County in 2012 for a cost of $2,600. We do see that we need more access points, so we will be installing more this year. CCAP does allocate a certain number of scanners to each county. If a county would like more scanners, they are welcome to purchase those on their own. E-filing does save valuable square footage that would have been used for storage. Some counties do pay for off-site storage. The cost of shelving, file folders, labels, and postage are also reduced. In my case, the annual cost of file folders in 2014 was $150. Previous years, it was over $3,000. We have also saved over 370 linear feet of file space by maintaining files electronically. As you know, this is a Badger County and state. Compare that to the length of a football field, and we are saving more file space compared to a football field. I want to share with you that some of the judges in Washington County do have concerns about e-filing and have shared those concerns with myself and others. I took some time to candidly speak to each one of them. their stance is not as black and white as I had believed. All of them felt that mandatory e-filing is coming, and they can see working with all case types except criminal. Their main concerns are with processing the large number of criminal cases that are stacked on their calendar on any given day. Most of them feel very strongly that paper works best in these circumstances, and they find that that is the most efficient way for them to work. The rule does not force anyone to go completely paperless. Although the official court record will be kept electronically, judges who want to work from paper can do so. For judges who want to use the new technology, there will be ample training, support, and opportunities to give input regarding the software. Upon the prompting of our presiding judge, Jean from CCAP and two of her staff came to Washington County to sit in court with them. Jean and her staff did some brainstorming with some of the judges and staff and came up with some really good ideas on how to design the software to work for our judges. The judges were happy to be part of this process and were glad they were able to give input. Now we are anxiously waiting to what CCAP has in store for us. We also have more training scheduled for the judges in April so they can learn more of the features of the judicial dashboard and become more comfortable with using it. After speaking to some members of the Washington County Bar Association, CCAP was able to provide training for them in January. I have heard nothing but good things from the attorneys who are e-filing, and I'm excited to say that our e-filings have increased by 120% since that training.
That was in January?
That was in January. In addition to training, my staff, judges, commissioner, and I are working on educating ourselves. We're going to different counties that are paperless and watching them in action. Training is essential to the rollout of mandatory e-filing. CCAP staff continues to offer training to anyone who is interested. It also removes some of that fear that's associated with something new. I would like to comment on information provided to the court by Carlo Esgueda, the president of the Wisconsin Clerks of Circuit Court Association and clerk of court of Dane County, who's also here today. He provided research published by the National Center of State Courts in partnership with the New Hampshire Judicial Branch, which notes that jurisdictions that implement e-filing report voluntary or permissive participation levels peak at 15%, while under mandatory rules of participation, that goes up to 97%. In order to create a more efficient court system, I feel it is necessary to make e-filing mandatory. I want to thank you for considering this petition that's in front of you today.
Well, thank you, Ms. Russell. And when we were at the PPAC meeting on the budget where the e-filing issue came up, there was a discussion of how the system was working in your county for, I think it was child support, if I remember it correctly.
Yes.
And there was a discussion between you and someone from the child support entity about this. I wonder if you can refresh my recollection on that and where we are now.
Yes. So Washington County was the pilot county for the child support portion of the e-filing. So it was with paternity cases. And we worked with the child support agency. CCAP worked very closely with them. Mm-hmm. They did slow down their filings. They had some concerns about it. And then CCAP was able to use some of those concerns and implement new features in the software. And now the other counties that are online are benefiting from the issues that we had in Washington County.
Well, there was ability to tweak to meet issues as they came along.
That's correct. That's part of being a pilot county. You're going to work out the bugs.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's good. Any questions, Ms. Russell? Thank you very much. Judge Koshnick?
I could have consulted with legal counsel.
That's always good.
You have the right to remain silent, okay. However. But,
you know, once you take the podium, you're up for grabs.
I understand.
Go ahead.
If you adopt the rule as we're proposing it today, there would be one change in the law. It would pertain to 2D signatures. So the signature provision says that a lawyer may delegate authority to a subordinate to use the attorney's password. That would be a change for all e-filed cases statewide. So it would apply to voluntary e-filed cases. It would also allow the attorney to use just the PIN rather than the current procedure of the password and the PIN. And that would take effect whenever you decide to have the rule take effect, before even any county was required to come online. I want to clarify that. 2D.
No charge. No money. Passes hands on this one.
Pardon me?
There's no cost, no fiscal effect of what you just said.
That's right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. I'm up to David Callender, Wisconsin Counties Association. Mr. Callender.
Thank you, Chief Justice and fellow justices. I'm David Callender. I'm a government affairs associate for the Wisconsin Counties Association. My comments will be very brief. You already have my written statement.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, from the standpoint of the Counties Association and from the standpoint of Wisconsin Counties, we are supportive of the effort to get e-filing in all of our counties, and we recognize that there is a need for a mandate in this respect. That if there is not at some point some requirement that counties participate in this, that this simply will not come to pass. That said, we have also been very supportive of the court's budget request for additional state funding for this, and that is the area that we have a concern. I think it's a concern that was echoed in the statement that you received from the Clerk of Courts Association and from the State Bar Association relating to the need for funding for this. And again, we recognize that there may be some long-term benefits in terms of efficiencies, additional cost reductions, but at the same time, where we have this transitional period where we're moving from an electronic system from a paper-based system to an electronic system, there may be some startup costs, which, again, the court is very familiar in terms of the constraints that counties are operating under and the commitments that counties are already making to funding the circuit court system. So
you don't want us to take it from the block grant to counties?
We would prefer not.
I just wanted it clarified.
I'm sorry?
I just wanted it clarified.
Yes, exactly. We know that there are already a number of draws on the block grant as it is, and that certainly in the courts, in the actual court's budget, the budget request of the governor, there was a significantly increase in funding for circuit courts, which unfortunately the governor chose not to include in his. Okay.
Same funding as last year, without a lapse.
Yeah. And again, I think the court has done a very good job in terms of recognizing the fiscal commitments that counties make in terms of operating the circuit court system and the overmatch that we provide in terms of funding the justice system. So again, we just ask that you not add to our burden. Thank you.
So you're supportive as long as the court finds the money someplace else, essentially.
Yeah, basically. And as long as you essentially keep an open-ended implementation.
Sure.
So that if we do have the money at the county level, and obviously we've had counties that have made that commitment, again, we appreciate the flexibility to be able to do it that way. So, as long as we have an open-ended, and as long as there's some, when we have counties that actually need the little push to get over there, that there is funding available to them.
Do you know, David, the $2 million that was requested, do you know what the breakdown would be of what goes to the counties and what goes to CCAP? I mean, do you have any idea? Let's take just hypothetically Fond du Lac County. How much money do they need in order to really jump into this?
That's been the difficulty, actually, in terms of trying to come up with a fiscal estimate on this, really. I've made some informal inquiries of the clerks of court. You know, how much do you think it's going to cost? And I think that's something where I haven't been able to nail that down. And so in terms of the actual request, I'm not sure I'd have to defer to the folks that actually put the request together.
Well, I think we might ask that of Ms. Busquette, of how much of the $2.2 million after Mr. Lee, Devin Lee, testifies. Devin, yes. Ms. Lee, how much would of that $2.2 goes to the county, and how much goes to hardware, software, and your employees and consultants? That's the question, right?
And I think just to add, I think given the uncertainty that we see right now in terms of the governor's proposal for the block grant and the implementation of that, I think that adds to our uncertainty in terms of the situation in implementing e-filing. I think if we knew that, you know, we were going to have the same formula for the circuit court support payments, that we knew that the payments would be made on July 1st and January 1st, we knew what the schedule and the appropriations were going to be, I think that would diminish some of the anxiety that we have on.
But you don't know because that whole area has been repealed.
Right.
So you're now just at the discretion of the court.
Right. And, of course, we always, you know, we have a wonderful relationship with the court. We know that the court appreciates the work that the counties do on this and would move expeditiously in terms of implementing a schedule and making those payments. But, again, it is one of those things where it gives us a certain amount of anxiety when we face the unknown.
Might give the court a certain amount of anxiety, too.
Well, that's good.
All right. Any other questions? All right. Thank you, Mr. Callender.
Thank you.
And I want to say that, and Mr. Callender knows, that the County Association and the court system have cooperated on any number of ventures, and we always talk. We may not always agree, but we always talk.
Indeed. Thank you.
Mr. Callender. Devin Lee. Legal counsel, state public defender. Hi.
Hey.
Half the time I say Mr. and half Ms. Thank you.
All right. The state public defender has already filed a letter in support of this petition, so I appreciate the opportunity to come and provide some additional remarks this afternoon. The state public defender continues to support the e-filing petition with the understanding that our agency would be exempt from the filing fees. And we want to thank Judge Koshnick for his leadership on this issue, as he has made clear both publicly and in subsequent conversations with us that he feels strongly about exempting the Public Defender's Office from the filing fees. It's the State Public Defender's understanding that the Director of State Courts, knowing that there isn't actually a director right now, but my understanding is that it's that office's intent to establish policies under rules under 7C of the rule that would exempt the state public defender and I believe other state agencies from paying the filing fee. So in addition to the cost issue, I want to provide you with just one other area, I guess, of concern for the state public defender, and that is technology. The state public defender is not known for its technological advancements. And so we would need to work very carefully with our justice partners in implementing the e-filing. You've heard a little bit about Dodge County and how the state public defender is working in Dodge County with e-filing. We are currently able to email Word documents, which is different, I think, from the ability to actually participate fully in e-filing. And just to give you an example, we are currently installing Windows 7 in our offices. We have 38 offices throughout the state. We cover 72 counties, many of which are still running on outdated software. So as we sort of get up to speed on that, we hope that at some point we'll be able to participate in the e-filing. According to the memo submitted by Judge Wirtz, the plan would be to roll out e-filing county by county with significant notice. And I want to mention only that that would be very important to us, because while we work to update our software and our hardware, that would enable us to prioritize particular counties if we have time to do that. We will unlikely be in the position of having our attorneys have laptops or tablets or any other technology in the courtroom, unlike some of the other jurisdictions you've heard about today. But e-filing would still be a huge advantage for our attorneys and allow for efficiencies, again, for some of the same reasons that you've already heard today, in terms of being able to access files remotely, be able to file motions and other things remotely. Some of our offices cover multiple counties, and so rather than traveling around, it's sort of, we would recognize a cost savings there. If we don't have adequate notice for which county is coming up, there is Section 2B of the petition, which allows certain parties or agencies to be exempted from the e-filing requirement, and we would probably have to rely on that section to not have to e-file, but we would rather not do so. And so with that being said, we are enthusiastic supporters of e-filing. I believe, as Justice Gableman said, it's inevitable. And I think Justice Prosser mentioned some fear of technology, and let me assure you I share that. But like other things, like email, like accessing our other records, banking records, health records online, I think at some point in the near future we'll get to the point where this seems as natural as everything else that we do. So again, we appreciate the opportunity to come share our thoughts today, and we look forward to e-filing with the concerns that I've shared with you.
You referred to Section 2, and I thought you said D, but I don't see how that
B. Fits. Sorry, 2B.
D, like boy. Gotcha. Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah.
You want to be exempt from filing fees, public defenders. And you talked about other state agencies, so I assume district attorneys, for example, would not have a filing fee. Is that right?
I believe there was a user fee for some litigants, but I believe that the district attorney's office also would be exempted from user fees.
They have the adequate computer and data ability that they don't need to be exempt. They're already tied in. That's my understanding from the district attorneys.
Okay.
And from Mr. Barrington, am I right?
Right. We have a CGF system whereby we populate their
databases. That's right. And my understanding from Kelly Thompson, who spoke at the PPAC budget meeting where we went through the e-filing, was their computer system is antiquated. It dated back to the year 2000. And that they could not take on this electronic filing with their present system. They did make a request to update their technology, but it is my understanding from Ms. Thompson that the governor did not include that in the budget. Is that right?
That is correct. We are still able to update some software and some hardware, but we will be able to update our software and hardware adequately for e-filing without, I think, exceptional cost to us.
Given enough notice, and you would do it in the order in which we put in e-filing so that it all meshed. And that raised the question, since they were not able to deal with it directly as the DAs were, of paying money when they were short of money for technology and short of money for paying court reporters for transcripts. So a filing fee with us for e-filing was not palatable, if I might say that. And Ms. Busquet did push the pencil and figured out how much extra everyone else would have to pay to cover not only the public defender, but should there be other government entities that had similar situation. And it went from, and I'll just round out the numbers, $5 to $6. And Ms. Busquet will repair my mistakes when she arrives here at the podium.
but that's where it was left, that there would be no charge as long as couldn't pay it. And we'd hope that you would have gotten the technology, would have resolved a lot of other problems for you and us, but
yeah,
that's what we decided to do.
So are all public litigants that, exempt from the fee?
I'm sorry, can you repeat
that? Are all litigants who are governmental entities exempt from the fee?
That I'm probably not the right person to answer that question. My understanding, and maybe Judge Koshnick can clarify, my understanding was that not only the state public defender, but that other state agency litigants would be exempted from the user fees.
That's correct. All government parties, DA, city attorney,
it's some because they already have the system, as they don't need anything. Others because they're public entities and they don't have the money.
How does that apply to private bar people who are appointed by the public defender?
I believe it would apply to any litigant represented by the state public defender, and that would include, under Chapter 977, people represented by both our staff attorneys and by our private bar attorneys.
So how does, Annette Ziegler is representing, has an appointment as a private bar public defender, but she also has some high rollers. How do you distinguish which case is which?
What we've done in other situations, for example, we share records with Department of Corrections that we're free. We share without a cost right now. And the way that we do that under those same circumstances, because our private bar attorneys have both private pay cases and our cases, is we submit, or we have them submit, the order appointing counsel. And so the order appointing counsel indicates that it is an appointment under Chapter 977 made by the state public defender, and that that is an indigent defendant. And I imagine we would do something similar to that when the attorney is filing something online. There would be some requirement that they either already have the order appointing counsel in the file, or that we would create something that would allow the court to see that.
What about situations where you have private bar attorneys acting as public defenders, but they're from a different county than the county that they're represented? Let's take Jefferson County. That's where the case is, but someone is from Greene County. What happens there? They have to follow Jefferson County?
There you would
without
ask
the training?
I'm sorry?
Even without the training? I mean, attorneys are going to be trained to do this.
Yes. So I think if I understand your question, it's how would an attorney from one county complete e-filing in another county, in a case
yeah.
in another county? I'll share a secret about myself, and that is that I am the least technologically savvy person probably that you'll ever meet. So I have no idea. That's the short answer.
I have no idea. There. Next question.
But let me venture a guess, which is that I think it probably doesn't matter what county you're in. My guess is that you are going to have the ability to e-file in multiple counties based on your own personal information, like. For me as an attorney with this bar number, with this PIN number, with my e-filing number, I imagine I can file in multiple counties. And in fact, we'll have to do that because we have staff attorneys who cover multiple counties up north, and we have private bar attorneys who cover multiple counties in the state as well.
Sounds as if the computer would be smart enough to work it out.
Yes, I hope so.
Smarter than we are.
Me, certainly. Thank you.
Any other questions? Does anyone wish to appear? Ms. Busquette, I'd like you to appear, if you would. I don't think this was your plan, nor mine.
Not my plan.
But at least two questions have come up, that, and there may be more that are so stimulated. One was if we had gotten or if we will get the $2.1 million, who gets that large sum of money?
So the $2.1 million would go completely to CCAP. That was used for hardware for the counties that we were going to put desktop scanners into a lot of different offices to help the counties convert their paper records into electronic records in preparation for e-filing. We were also going to provide dual screen monitors. So the judges talked about having four different documents up at one time and being able to work through the court record, train the judges as we're moving forward prior to e-filing so they knew how to work in the electronic record with the electronic documents. Another portion of the money was to purchase three contract programmers to assist us with enabling the CCAP e-filing program statewide and for all case types. So as they said, we have e-filing for civil, family, small claims, paternity, and criminal. There's many more case types that we would need to enable, so we would need programming staff to help us do that. And then finally, we had eight analyst staff, and those are the people that are really the boots on the ground. They would go out and train the judges, the clerk staff, the different agency filers, private attorneys, and the bar.
What will be the, as best you can guesstimate, the increased cost to the county if the county went mandatory under these rules?
If we were to do the implementation that we plan to do, it would be very minimal. Some counties do purchase additional scanners because they want more scanners available to staff than what we currently allocate. Those scanners cost about $300 each, so those are fairly cheap to purchase on their own. The other cost is Wi-Fi in the courtroom. We think that it may not be mandatory in every courtroom, but it would be a good feature that they have so that the attorneys would have access to the Internet and their records. Teresa Russell said it was about, I think, $2,500 for Washington County to put their Wi-Fi in. So that would be an expense for the county.
As I counted up, it would be less than $3,000, most probably. The $2,500 plus putting in maybe two scanners. Maybe I would up it to $4,000.
Yeah, it could be a little bit more. And counties, large counties like Dane and Milwaukee counties, Wi-Fi would take considerably more money than Washington just because they'd have to go through so many different floors and courtrooms. Their Wi-Fi it would have to be a little bit more robust. Mm-hmm. So their cost would be higher.
And that would be the principal cost then.
Correct. It's basically a one-time cost.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned eight people, three contract programmers and eight other staff for training. Are all of those people going to be paid out of the $2.1 million? I thought the eight people were in addition to the $2.1 million.
All of the three staff, for the three contract staff, the eight analyst staff, and all the hardware make up the $2.1 million.
Okay, so everything that you need comes out of $2.1
million. Correct.
Because everyone is temporary on this one.
Pardon?
The staff is temporary.
The staff is
temporary. It's a two-year commitment for the staff.
Correct.
And then you're hoping that the maintenance can be done with the filing fee.
Correct.
As I understand the plan.
Correct.
All right. The next, go ahead.
I sort of had a completely different vision of how this would work. Let's say we come up with $300,000 somewhere. We would be saying, okay, Dodge County is way ahead here, so somehow we're going to fund Dodge County, and they're so eager in Fond du Lac County, we're going to fund them. But how do you do this step by step, county by county, if there's no money for you?
So the option that we put forward, we need the $2.1 million in order to do the implementation that we proposed. There's other ways that we could look at implementing e-filing, and I think we'd have to go back and study that a little bit. The other judges had talked about that we could use a vendor system, and that's something we could study, but we would have to also look at what the cost would be to filers if we did that, because they would go up. We could also look at enabling the current case types statewide
for the 31 counties that are currently participating and make those mandatory. So there's different options for implementation, but I think we would really need to go back and study them. A county would really have a hard time going forward on its own because currently CCAP writes the program for e-filing. That program currently can't accept all case types. So until that programming is done, no county can go fully on e-filing using the current CCAP system.
Do you have people on your staff who are currently capable of doing the programming for e-filing?
Yes.
Okay. So you're asking for three additional as a statewide rollout, but if it didn't go statewide right away, do you have staff that could carry this forward?
If we use our staff that we currently have, we would have to reallocate them from the work that they do for the circuit courts, for the judicial dashboard enhancements and document scanning improvements and things for the clerk staff and move that to the e-filing program.
Okay, but you could move people around. You also have some vacancies, don't you?
We currently have three vacancies that we are trying to move forward on hiring.
Okay, well, as you're thinking about moving forward on hiring, are you thinking about folks that could handle what may need to be done for e-filing?
For one of those positions, we are, yes. One of them is a programmer that could do that type of work.
Yeah, but not the other two?
No, the other two are needed in other areas within the operation.
As I understand it, your revenues are already down. And what problems is that creating, and how does it relate to what we're talking about?
I would have a hard time wanting to fund the CCAP or the e-filing program out of the CCAP program revenues and staff we have right now because our revenues are down 24% for the last year, and going into this fiscal year, they are remaining that low. We have had to make some really tough decisions about what hardware should we delay in upgrading. We've changed some of our equipment replacement timeframes. We've really done a lot of new technology initiatives as wisely as we could to make things basically make do with what we have for money going forward. But again, part of what we've done is put off some of those purchases that we are going to need to make. So we're looking at making enhancements where we can get the same amount of technology out of less dollars. But at this point, we really have very few places that we can go that we can keep making those kinds of returns on investment.
So really, you need more money to be made whole where you are now without taking on a lot of these responsibilities.
I think it would be dangerous to ask us to do it without having the revenue there or some way to fund this or to implement it in a way that it is more taken care of, not inside of the CCAP budget at this point.
Now, the governor's budget plans that you, CCAP, would get approximately $750,000. Now, this comes from surcharges, et cetera, so that's a guesstimate because we don't know how many would the surcharges will be and whether anybody is going to pay, and if so, how many of them will pay. And one of the things that were discussed at the meeting between the governor's representatives and the court, and I think chief judges, but at least with the court, was that $750,000, and I think it was per year, but Gene, you correct, it's per year, could be used, that's $1.5 million, so I mean that's almost more than half of what you wanted, could be used at least as a starter for CCAP. But that I was told by you, and this is what I advise the Legislative Fiscal Bureau, that can't plan that way because you need that basic money, whatever it turns out to be, to just cover your ordinary, usual, continuing business needs. I mean, that's because your revenue is decreasing every year and the, quote, carryover keeps going down and it doesn't look as if it's going to change.
Correct.
So that we can't plan on using any significant part of the $750,000 if you see it at all.
Yeah, I would advise against that. Again, if you look at what we've been operating under for our balances and how they've gone down the last 5 years, it's been really difficult to keep a beginning balance where we feel comfortable that there's money in the bank to pay the bills and to recover the different hardware and replace it on time so that systems aren't down. I mean, we've been very lucky that the CCAP systems are up and we've been able to recover disasters in different counties. But every year when we are underfunded, that puts some of those response times and our abilities at risk.
So you would prefer then that we not do e-filing if we can't also find $2.1 million?
I would love that we do e-filing. I think that the committee needs to look at other options that we can make that happen. I just think it's important not to think we can get it out of CCAP's base budget.
Well, my question, though, to you was, if we can't find $2.1 million, then you would prefer that we not implement this mandatory e-filing.
I think that we may have to look at other options where it won't cost $2.1 million, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
If we made the time frame longer or we come up with different ways to do implementations, we should still go forward with e-filing if we can.
That might be able to give us some different proposals to look at other than the ones we have so far.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
thank you. I'll ask you the same question I've asked them. Regardless of the money, for the moment, you want these rules in place. That was my understanding
yes.
from you and from the chief judges.
Yes. I think we have good momentum
yes.
with e-filing. Yes.
Okay. I had another question that came up here. I asked about the amount of money. And the other question that came up was the fees by a government or public entities. What's the plan on that?
So the plan is that none of the government filers would pay the e-filing fee. So that would be local municipal courts, local agencies, county agencies, and state agencies. They would all be exempt.
And that would push up your guesstimate of the private bar paying what
right.
per filing.
So we
and
were
it's per case filing, not per, right. Per unit filing, or not per document filing.
Right, it's per case. We currently charge $5 per case. We took out all of the government filers, recalculated, and we were able to set a $575 per case charge.
I rounded that out to $6.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does this apply to municipal courts, too?
No. No, CCAP does not have any systems in municipal courts, so we don't really have any interaction with them, so no.
Well, I know in my home county, say the city of Appleton, it does not have a municipal court. All the municipal cases come into circuit court. So it would apply to them.
Correct. So any filings in circuit court, it would apply to. So a city attorney would need to e-file through the e-filing system.
Do you see this as applying to municipal courts someday?
I don't know.
But they don't have CCAP at all. So they don't have our computers because they're not, they are part of the state, but they're paid for. The municipal courts are paid for by the municipality, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have our computers. They may have computers, right? But they're on the city
right.
system. So if we're going to do e-filing, we'd have to start at the baseline of computers and CCAP, meaning the basic data, financials, et cetera, and then e-filing. I mean, by now we have that down pat, I think,
mm-hmm.
so you might put them all in at one time rather than pilot it through the municipal courts, but maybe you'd have to pilot. But they're not on CCAP at all, which is not to say they might not want to be. Right?
Someday with funding. Again, that's another project, I think.
That's huge because there are roughly, what number did we learn? At least
250.
250
that was
rounded out.
More than
it was
that.
Even more than
think,
that, yeah. Those are the two questions that I heard and marked down during the conversation. Are there any other questions you'd like to ask Ms. Busquet? Busquet is the way you pronounce it.
I say Busquet. You can say it however you want.
I know we have this discussion about whose family name it is and how the family pronounces it.
Thank
which
you.
Which side of the family. Thank you very much, Ms. Busquet. Okay. Other, anyone else wants to make an appearance? If not, then we can hear a final word, if you wish, from either Judge Wirtz or Judge Koshnick. Your choice. Flip the coin.
Coin flip. Your interest, Justices, in this petition, I'd just like to reiterate that the Chief Judges are unanimous. The committee has been working on this for about 2 years, been working hard on it, putting a lot of thought into it. We're confident that this rule is the appropriate way to implement e-filing and step into the future, which is inevitably upon us. So thank you for your time and your consideration.
Judge Koshnick, ordinarily I keep a list of what people have said should be changed and revised and things that come up. And I did not hear, although I discussed with you several of them, and you did file a change. And the Legislative Reference Bureau, to whom we always send these proposals, had a suggestion about the definitions and having substantive matters in them. I looked at them and it sort of escaped me, but I'd be happy to look at them again. And if you have any comments of any changes that you think had to be made
to other statutes
of the rules, a proposal that should be made before they're adopted, if they are adopted. Do you have any changes that you want to be made? No.
No. The rule as proposed, with the exceptions we talked about today, removing the end date and the clarifications, which were really typographical in nature from Judge Wirtz, submitted a week or two ago.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions?
Judge? Why don't we let Judge Wirtz speak as well? Come on.
Okay. The one technical clarification that was added, which I think has been referred to, was the letter that I sent to the court, and that was to clear up the idea that if someone submits a document and asks for a fee waiver because they're indigent, that the time of filing would relate back to the date of filing, even though the judge granted the fee waiver subsequently. So if the judge subsequently grants the fee waiver, the date of filing is the date of filing, not the date the judge approves the fee waiver.
That
was the only technical clarification. Other than that, as Judge Koshnick indicated, the request is that the rule be approved as a mandatory e-filing to realize the efficiencies of it. And this is the considered opinion of many people who have worked on this. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I, on behalf of the court, want to thank Judges Wirtz and Koshnick for chairing and leading in the discussion and for their efforts in vetting this rule in various venues so that it was appropriately tweaked to gather the support that it got. I want to thank Judge Storm and his three colleagues from Dodge County for appearing. Always thank the Wisconsin County Association for their aid and assistance. And I want to thank the Public Defender's Office, who worked very hard on this petition and met with the chief judges and attempted to come to a conclusion about the fee, which was really a basic issue in August on this petition. So thanks to all, and thank you to our staff, Jean Busquette, for all her hard work and her understanding of this, Marcia Vandercook for her efforts in working with the chief judges, and if I left anyone out, so be it.
Well, I have a request, even though, and I should have asked Jean Busquette when she was up. I wonder if I could recall her for just one question. I had it on my initial notes, and then I'm writing so much here I forgot to go back and look.
Absolutely.
My question to you is this. As you put together e-filing, have you, for CCAP generally, in the criminal area, got a coordinated defendant number with Department of Corrections so that we can go back and forth on sentencing and what our courts are doing?
Yes, we actually received grant funding, I believe, last year.
Okay.
The DAIT system, so PROTECT, which is the DA's case management system,
okay.
DOJ, and CCAP all received funding, and what the funding was for is to take the SID, which stands for State Identification Number,
exactly.
and share that between DOJ and the DA, and then once the DA has that, they will send that document, the complaint, all the data that they need to send us, and the SID information so that we can populate the CCAP case management system. That same SID already goes to the Department of Correction,
mm-hmm.
so all of the criminal justice systems will have that same number for each defendant.
I think DOC has had an identifying number for a long time, but our problem has been the courts haven't used the same
right.
identifier.
And they had a DOC ID, so now everybody's going to use a statewide identification number, so
but
every person will have one number in all the systems.
Do you know when that will be implemented?
Our part is done. The DAIT part is done. DOJ had more work to do that on that, and they said they were a year off at least 6 months ago, and they get a little behind on some of their grant projects.
Okay,
I'm not
right.
exactly sure where they are on that
okay,
one.
Okay, good. Thank you so much.
Who funded it, Jean?
It was the NIC grant.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. I'll take the chance. This ends the hearing. All right. We close the hearing on 14-03, in recreation of WSSTAT 80118, relating to mandatory electronic filing in circuit court and conversion to electronic circuit court records. We have concluded that the court's magic hour is 5:30, but it's 4:51, so the court will be back in about 10 minutes and see what we can do in a half hour. We are adjourned in hearing. We will come back for an open rules hearing.